been a big stretch of basketball for the Suns these last couple of days. Winners at home against the Utah Jazz, losers last night to the LA Clippers, both games on national television, and both games kind of pre-playoff tests for the Phoenix Suns. And joining us right now, and it's always a pleasure to have her join us on the show. I wish we could chat with her more often, but she's got a lot going on. Ramona Shelburne.
She's busy.
She's very busy. She joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, but we're always glad when we have her on from ESPN. Ramona, welcome back to the show. I hope things have been well for you.
What's going on, guys?
How are you?
But like, yeah, it's just, you know what? Honestly, it's pandemic busy, though, right? Like, that's, there's like different levels of busy now.
A year ago, we were doing the show from my house and jumping right on a trampoline and shooting baskets in my backyard.
So I'm actually driving home from the studio. Can you believe it? We go into the studio again, and I'm going to drive by Dodger Stadium as we're talking, and it's actually opening day here in L.A. There's like 11,000 fans, but like we haven't had fans here in Los Angeles or California at all, in over a year. So it's kind of amazing.
20,000 for the D-backs home opener tonight. So they're allowing 20,000 in. It's a little bit less.
Is that
less
like a normal crowd, though, for the D-backs? Like,
take the shot.
You put that right on a team, man. I mean, that's, you know.
Oh, my God.
You know, you
thanks
know
for joining us, Ramona. Bye. Yeah. It was nice having you on the show.
I saw the full house at the Rangers stadium. I'm like, God. I mean, I guess they just needed the pandemic to fill up that stadium because they never fit there. But, it's going to be great. I can't wait to go to a baseball game. Oh, my God. I'm going next week. I'm so excited.
Oh, that's great. Like, well, we're looking forward to the playoffs. They should be. I know LA's, the Lakers and Clippers are going to have fans soon. We've got fans here with the Suns, and they're hoping they'll be expanding it more. I want to get your thoughts on this Clippers team because the Suns took care of the Jazz the other night. The Clippers scare me a little bit. I mean, when Paul George plays like that, they seem almost unbeatable. Just give me your thoughts on that team. And they got Cousins. They got Rondo. I mean, they seem like they set themselves up for a title run.
Well, you know, it's interesting. They're interesting to me, too, because, like, I feel like we talked about them a lot last year, and they didn't really handle the attention, the front-runner status. They didn't handle that very well. And I think they've really flown under the radar this year because they were such a disappointment last year, the way they ended and the – I mean, it's just totally choked in the playoffs, right? Up 3-1 in that series, okay? So, like, I think that they're actually under the radar. Like, last night was kind of the first time, at least on the national stage, where they really beat somebody good, and it was an impressive win. Now, I'll say this about Phoenix. Like, that was kind of a scheduled loss, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the night after the Utah game, that was a big win for them. They have this tiebreaker over the Jazz, 7 in a row, and then, you know, come on out to L.A., and, you know, here's the Clippers who are rested, ready to, you know, get you on the second night of a back-to-back, okay? So that to me was like, I'm not going to hold that against Phoenix, although it may end up being a key game because now the Clippers have the tiebreaker over the Suns, right?
Yes.
And I think that top of the West is going to get real interesting. LeBron James kind of teased on Instagram that he and Anthony Davis are getting close to coming back. The Lakers, who a week ago I was a lot more worried they were going to fall out and maybe end up in the play-in games, I feel like they're going to stabilize a little bit. And they can probably avoid that. So let's put the Lakers at fifth or sixth, okay? Fifth or sixth for the Lakers. Man, do you want to be the number three team that gets the Lakers in the first round?
No.
We're worried about that. Ooh. We're worried about the Suns having to play the Lakers in the first round.
I would be. Yeah. I mean, look, I think the Suns are really good. I think they're kind of – people don't believe it yet because they've been bad for so long. But this is really building off of what they did in the bubble. I really think they – you know, Chris Paul has been a great addition for them. I think he should be in the MVP conversation. I mean, he's going to be on my ballot. I don't know where he'll be on the ballot, but it'll – I mean, let's just see how we finish out the year.
Yeah.
Would he be ahead of Booker?
I think so. I think he gets the credit for it, even though Booker's the better player. I don't know. You guys cover him day in and out. What do you think?
I think that's the most difficult debate, trying to figure out who's more responsible. I mean, Booker is the better player, but does any of this happen without Chris Paul? But then he doesn't really profile with MVP numbers. It's hard. It's hard to pick one of those two guys.
I'll tell you what. Chris Paul was on my top five last year MVP ballot. I think I had him either fourth or fifth. I can't remember if I did it fourth or fifth, but he was on my ballot last year in Oklahoma City, and I just think what he's done in the latter stages of his career is incredible. I mean, he is, to me, the, you know, him changing his diet, and then he has, like, what is the secret sauce that he's drinking there?
Yes, the purple stuff.
Whatever. Yeah. I love that it's Nate. I love that it's Nate. Like, it says, like, Chris's secret drink or whatever. Yeah. Well, it's not a secret if you say it's a secret. He's just been awesome. He's elevated them in a way that, you know, I don't think they could have drawn it up any better. I mean, if you went into the season saying this would be the best case scenario, I think you're right there. But, I think they have a nice team. Their defense is better than you think. They have some depth. Nice young players who don't seem to be afraid of anything. They got that swagger from the undefeated time in the bubble. I don't want to see them in the first round if I'm the Lakers, but I know you don't want to see the Lakers if you're in the first round either.
Yeah, the Suns could be a tough out. They could be.
Yeah.
With us, with the Paul thing, and I want to ask you about this because Chris Paul can opt mm-hmm. out after this year. He's got a $44 million option. I mean, you never thought that a guy at his age would opt out of $44 million, but the way he's played.
I know.
I mean, could he opt out and get a 2-year deal for $70 million somewhere? I mean, that's the thing. That's one of the things we're trying to figure out, too. Would Chris Paul opt out of his second year with Phoenix, test the free agent market? I don't think his family came with him. I think they're in L.A. So they're in L.A. They're not here. So I wonder if that could be a factor. So that's one of the biggest things that we're wondering. Because when they got him, you thought you had him for 2 years. You thought, he's here for 2 years no matter what. Now you're like, oh, my God, he's played so well. Could he possibly opt out?
I know. And, and where is he up against that age 36 number? Because there's a you can't extend beyond that, I think, at that rate.
He's within that because he's only 35 right now. He'll be 36 next month.
Right. So that caps however long he can extend for at that as an extension, right? And you sign different deals as you get older, okay? But what's interesting with Chris is he had what we thought was one of the most immovable contracts in the NBA. Remember when he got – When Houston traded for him, it was they had to give up something, right? They had to incentivize the deal, okay? When Houston traded in Oklahoma City, they had to throw in picks to get them to take him, okay? And I think that even the last couple of years, like, this was seen as an albatross contract. Who'd you rather have right now, Chris Paul or John Wall? Chris Paul or Russell Westbrook?
Right. Not even close.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's not even close, right? And I think that's really incredible the way he's turned that around. And I don't know. I haven't quite gone vegan yet. I mean, I live in Los Angeles. I know everybody does it. But, I mean, if you don't – he's doing something right, okay? Like, I don't know if it's just a plant-based diet or the way he trains or just – I think, to be honest, like, Chris has been a guy – just knowing him from Los Angeles and knowing him his whole time in the career, this is a guy who wants to win.
Yeah.
He's at the end of his career. He needs to be in a situation where he can win. You're on a team right now that's second in the West, that's got a good chance to win the Western Conference. Unless he can leave to go find another place where he thinks he has a better chance at winning, why not stay right where you are, where you're close to your family? You can just hop over to L.A. anytime you want. They can hop over to Phoenix. I don't know. I mean, you know, when he first came there, I thought, okay, he'll be there for a year or two and then go to New York, play for the Knicks or something, but not anymore.
Yeah. Ramona, leave us with this. You mentioned the Suns, and we saw these back-to-back games against Utah and the Clippers. Did they – you can provide a national perspective better than anybody I can think of. Did they need those two games and performing well, even though they lost last night in those two games, to validate them as a team, to give people a reason to believe they could win a title or win the West?
I thought that Utah game really – that turned some heads, man. That to me was like, all right, these teams are good. These teams are really good. And there's this, they're ultimately, it's going to come down to the playoffs. Like, it's like the Clippers last year. Like, we can all look at it on paper and go, okay, they should be great. They got Paul George and Kawhi. They got so much depth, and they beat out, you know, every time there was a player that was up for grabs, either in a trade or a free agency, like, it was like the Clippers got them and the Lakers didn't. But, you know, it came down to the playoffs. And I think that's when you're a team that hasn't been there in a while. But can I just say, I'm so happy Phoenix is good again. I really – I was out there
not
a few
as happy
years
as
ago,
us.
I was talking to – I mean, I was talking to Julie from, you know, who runs the media relations for the Sun, Julie Fee. And
Julie
Fye. I was like, man – for Julie Fye. Yeah, I never know how to pronounce it. I'm sorry. I always just call her Julie. I was like, Julie, you guys need to get good again. I need to come out to Phoenix more. It's one of my favorite towns. I loved going out there during the D'Antoni years, the Alvin Gentry years, the Steve, we'll call them the Steve Nash years, okay?
Yeah.
That's probably more accurate. And that's one of the great NBA cities. And I think, like, once the Suns get Hellman again, that's a free agent destination. It should be, especially if you can just reestablish getting to the playoffs every year.
Yeah,
getting there and not being a lottery team all the time.
Ramona, fantastic stuff. We appreciate you joining us on short notice. Be safe out there in L.A., and I hope we get to talk to you a whole lot sooner than we did this last time.
I get to see you in person in the playoffs. I don't know how it's going to work, but
We will look for you. You look for
Make
us. We
happen.
Will look for you. Absolutely. Thanks, Ramona. We appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Guys.
You got it.
Yep.
Ramona Shelburne joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Infinity, luxury cars, legendary service. Visit CoulterInfinity.com. Good stuff. We appreciate her coming on. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, we'll turn our attention to the Cardinals trying to address their running back position by doing it on the cheap. And if it works, other teams might look at this blueprint provided by the Cardinals and say, that's how you do it when it comes to the running backs. And that's next on the Burns and Gambo show. Friday afternoon edition of the Burns and Gambo show. Hope you all had a good week. Thank you very much for joining us. If you're heading down to the ballpark tonight for opening day for the Arizona Diamondbacks, hope to see you down there at some point as we get you ready for the weekend and for the NFL draft, which is 3 weeks away from yesterday. We are within the three-week window now of the NFL draft. We're getting closer and closer. And, Gambo, as you've suggested many times, free agency for now for the Cardinals is likely done. And on the day you were gone on Tuesday getting your second vaccination shot, we were talking about a story from Darren Urban in which he said another reason why it's done is that you with the comp picks and knowing that the Cardinals are probably going to get three of them based off of the formula, you really don't want to sign anybody between now and the beginning of the draft because you don't want to mess with that. You've got
good point,
right? You've
great
got
point.
If you sign a guy after the draft, and I'm not exactly sure when it is after the draft, but if you wait until after the draft, those players don't count towards the comp pick formula. So at this point, most teams are just going to wait to sign guys until after the draft because they don't want to mess with any picks that they might have coming in. And right now, the Cardinals are projected to have three extra picks this time a year from now, thanks to what happened in free agency.
Son Reddick would be one, right? Patrick Peterson.
The Reddick one gets canceled out, I think, with A.J. Green. But the Peterson one is like a fifth rounder, and then some of the other guys they lost are seventh rounders. Hudson doesn't count because he was a trade.
A trade, right.
Malcolm Butler and J.J. Watt don't count because those players were released. They weren't at the end of their contract. So they don't count to the formula. So you add it all up, and it looks like they're going to get an extra fifth and two extra seventh rounders this time a year from now. And they don't want to mess with that. They don't want to sign anybody. But the running back position, and the one name that you've said they might still be interested in potentially is James Conner, right? He's still out there. He hasn't signed.
I don't know about Giovanni Bernard. A lot of people ask me about Giovanni Bernard. I don't know. They're so tied up right now in draft meetings, and I just don't think it's a priority. But I do know that they like James Conner.
Okay.
He's a guy that I think if he would come in. But again, they don't have any money. So it's just, guys on the minimum now. I mean, anybody they sign is going to be a minimum guy. So if he's willing to take the minimum, the Cardinals would be interested in signing him.
Yeah. There was as it relates specifically to the running back position for the Cardinals, there was a terrific story on azcardinals.com from Kyle Odegaard, who writes, the Cardinals could be an interesting case study in 2021 if they go into the season with Chase Edmonds as their lead back and only low-priced options behind him. Now, they probably will sign somebody else. But for now, let's go with this. Chase Edmonds is their lead back and only low-priced options behind him. The team is currently lowest in the NFL in running back spending, both in terms of total cap hit and average per player salary. And Kyle kind of points out that the rest of the league might be looking at the Cardinals as, hey, if they're only going to spend $3 million on their running backs, $3.8 million on their running backs, and they can succeed with that, will they become kind of a guinea pig, a test case for the rest of the league on reducing their spending at the running back position?
I mean, it's a good question. It's almost like the Diamondbacks in the bullpen, right? You're not going to spend there's an area you're not going to spend on. For the D-backs, it's the bullpen. For the Cardinals right now, it's the running back spot. I mean, they spent on the running back spot last year, but, they've got guys, they like Chase. And they're going to have to decide whether they want to pay him or not, after next year. They like Eno a little bit, right? So they do like Eno a little bit. So I think that there's a chance that he may get some opportunities. But they were never going to sign any of the big name running backs for big dollars. It just wasn't in their plan. You know, they weren't going to spend. They did it last year, but they weren't even going to spend $5 million on a running back. They weren't interested in spending $5 million. So, you know, any running back whose name came up that wanted to get $5, $6, $7, $8 million, it was never an option for the Cardinals. The only guys that are options are guys that are willing to come in for the veteran minimum. So I still think they get a veteran, you know, and so you could say it's on the cheap, but, you know this because a lot of these running backs that are making big money, that they end up, it ends up being a waste of money.
Yeah.
These organizations waste a lot of money on these running backs.
Yeah, I mean, look, he even points out in the story, every situation is different. And I agree with you. They're going to end up signing a veteran sometime after free agent, after the draft, I would imagine, to kind of help round out the room. And Kyle points out in the story that if Edmonds hadn't shown as much promise as he did the last couple of years, the Cardinals might have felt compelled to spend a little less on the offensive line and on the defensive line and a little more on running back because they wouldn't have felt good about their option at the position. But because he showed them something, they kind of felt like they could do it on the cheap. This is the last year of Edmonds' rookie deal. So at some point, they're either going to have to pay him or pay somebody to replace him if they let him walk, unless they really think that Eno Benjamin or Jonathan Ward are the long-term solutions if Edmonds leaves. But I think by and large, I agree with the concept that Kyle's putting out there, and I think you would know why I would feel this way about it. I feel like if there's one position where you could do it like this with, it would be the running back position, freeing you up to spend money on other premium positions. I feel like that's the way to do it in the NFL.
Yeah, now listen, they could get a running back in the draft, or they can get a running back in free agency, but they're going to add another running back. They're not just going to go in with, you know, with the guys that they have. They'll add somebody. You know, but it could be a rookie, it could be a veteran. I don't think it'd be both, but you never know. But listen, you got to pick and choose, right? You can't, you know, Colt McCoy, the backup quarterback, is on a veteran's minimum contract. And, you know, we talked about where do you spend your money on, you know, the teams, a lot of wise teams will spend the $3, $4, $5 million on a backup. Well, they didn't do that. You know, they went cheap on the backup quarterback. They just feel like they got a better backup quarterback than they had in previous years. You got to pick and choose your spots, where you spend money and where you don't spend money. And when that, I mean, every team in the league has an area in which they're spending, you know, less than the average. Every team in the league, you know, for some teams it might be the safeties, for some it might be the cornerback, for some it could be the tight ends. It, you know, different positions. Every team has positions that they, you know, that they cut corners on. For the Cardinals, it looks like running back is going to be that one.
Yeah, and if they do, and I wouldn't be opposed to them drafting.
You're going to write a book about it.
I wouldn't be opposed to them drafting a running back. And I don't know if I'd do it in the first round if I were them, but I mean, draft one in the second, or if you trade down in the second and pick up an extra pick somewhere in the third or fourth. I mean, you could even see potentially that guy becomes your future starter if you decide that Chase Edmonds is not worth whatever it's going to take to keep him around. I don't feel like I could write a book, but I do think I've completely embraced the idea outside of a very rare exception here or there. Like, you look around the league, the move that is most often panned as being one of the worst free agency deals was the Raiders signing Kenyon Drake. I mean, that gets...
Right. Well, because they had a guy.
Right, right.
They got Jacobs. They got a really good player. So, so that's why you're like, oh, man, it's just like that. They had a guy. Like, why? They're the extreme. Like, who's spending the most money on running backs? I mean, you can look at it that way. But, like, they're not spending a lot on Jacobs, but then they're spending money on Drake. But they've already had it. Like, that's where they could have saved money. They've got a running back that doesn't cost them a lot right now. Why did they just go spend money on Kenyon Drake?
No doubt about it. The Phoenix Suns, even with the loss last night, you just heard Ramona Shelburne talking to us about a moment ago, making believers out of more and more NBA experts and analysts. So, should we start raising our own expectations for this Suns team as the playoffs are just 21 games away? We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Well, I don't know if you take any pride in this if you're a Phoenix Suns fan or not, because the Suns did lose to the LA Clippers in what was a very physical game last night. But did you see where the Clippers say they're resting Paul George on the second night of a back-to-back tonight?
I didn't see that. Are they?
He's not playing against the Houston Rockets. Yeah. So the Suns apparently.
Well, they got it. Warm out. Did you see their schedule?
The Clippers?
The Clippers schedule?
No.
It's so easy.
Oh.
They've got the second easiest schedule in the NBA. I took a look at it. They got seven games coming up against Houston, Oklahoma City, Detroit, and Minnesota.
That's not good. that's not good.
Seven out of their final 20 will be against Houston, Oklahoma City, Detroit, and Minnesota.
Yeah,
easy peasy.
Yeah, they're only two games back of the Phoenix Suns now for the number two seed in the Western Conference. So, and they have the tiebreaker as well with last night's game. So that has happened as well. But look, the Suns, like they did against Utah the night before, I think even in a loss, they showed that they can hang, that they belong. There was some fatigue there at the end of the game. Everybody's kind of acknowledged it without wanting to use that as an excuse. That hasn't stopped the national types from really buying in. And we just had Ramona Shelburne on at the top of this hour, 3 o'clock, in which she said she thinks that the Utah game in particular, really for a lot of national kind of analysts, looked at that and said, oh, yeah, the Suns, they're legit. They're for real. They can hang. Bill Simmons on his podcast today says there's no question about it. The Suns are a legit contender in the West.
I just think there's a lot of parity in the West this year. And the only way there's not going to be parity is if Davis and LeBron come back 100% and they lay the smackdown. But for now, we can't see that. We're within, you know, the play-in game is May 18th. We're within 5 weeks of that, 5.5 weeks. And this is just kind of one of those seasons. It's like the bubble last year where it seemed inconceivable to a lot of you that Miami could make the finals, and all of a sudden they were in the finals. I think it would be an amazing story. And I do think it's conceivable. They're a true contender. And if I had to rank the West teams, I'd still have the Lakers one. And I would have Phoenix and Denver kind of 2A and 2B, and I would have Utah 4.
Mm.
But then where's he got the Clippers?
He didn't.
So the Clippers aren't in his top five. Four.
Well, he's not in his top four. Well, they could be fourth, I guess. He had the Lakers.
He's got Utah fourth.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. He said Utah fourth.
He's got L.A. one.
Yep.
He's got the Suns tied with Denver. That's 2A and 2B, so that's your second and third.
Yep.
And then he's got
Utah fourth.
Utah fourth.
I had forgotten that he said Utah. Yeah.
He doesn't even have the Clippers in his top. And the Clippers, like, I don't know, like, who scares you the most? Is it still the Lakers?
Yes, for me it's still the Lakers.
I think it's the Clippers for me. I don't know why. Styles make fights, right? Styles make fights. LA's been banged up all year. All year they've been banged up. They're gonna have to kind of bring it together, you know. They're exhausted because they played longer than anybody. Them and the Heat played longer than anybody, and their key player is an old player, still great but old. And he's been injured, and Anthony Davis has been injured, and they don't have great depth. Their depth is not great. I don't know. I mean, I think the Clippers scare me more than the Lakers do. And again, it's a personal preference.
Sure, of course, yeah.
And styles make fights.
Yeah, and I don't believe the Suns have beaten the Clippers in Los Angeles. I think I heard on the broadcast last night since 2013. I think it's been a long time since they've won there. I have to check my facts on that. It could be a little off. But Simmons continues to make the case for why the Suns, he thinks, are a real championship contender. I'll let him run off the reasons.
They have an identity. They play with pace. They're efficient. They know who they are. They have two guys who can create really, really, really good shots when it matters in Paul and Booker. And they have interchangeable wings, pretty flexible team. Ayton allows them to basically play a bunch of smaller guys around them. And you look at the stats, they're averaging almost 115 points a game. Their shooting percentages were 49, 38, 83, which is really good. Seventh in offense, but 25th in pace. They're playing about as slow as any contending team, but they're getting all the shots they want, and they're getting them a high level of efficiency. And they're also the third best free throw team in the league. And here's why that's important. If they're up three with 20 seconds left, the game's over. Chris Paul's 93%, Booker's 86, Johnson's 88, Bridges and Crowder are both 82. They're winning a free throw shooting contest. So they got that. And I think they know who their best five are.
Man, he just keeps making the case, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's just making the case.
Yeah. And listen, I mean, all these stats and everything is stuff that we didn't have a long time ago. But, you know, they play at a pace. They used to 7 seconds or less was Dan Antonio. And I think before Chris Paul came here, they wanted to play at a faster pace. They wanted to play at a quicker pace. But you can't do that with Chris Paul. You know, Chris Paul's, you know, he's not the tallest. He's not the most athletic. He's not a speed guy. He's a smart guy. He's a brain guy. You know, he'll make the right play. You don't notice it, though. I mean, when I watch the Suns bat, when I watch the Suns, they're so efficient and they move the ball around so much that I'm going to be honest with you, I don't even notice that they play at a much slower pace. They do, but I don't even notice it. Like, I don't know if other people feel the same way, because they get the ball and there's a lot of ball movement. They move the ball. They don't walk the ball up the court every time and take a shot with 2 seconds left on the clock. They wait for the right shot, and if it comes with 15 seconds left, 10 seconds, or 5 seconds, that's when they'll take it.
Yeah, I think it is a great observation by you that they're not playing with pace. They're kind of more of a slow half-court team.
But you don't notice
it.
And
I think that's Monty's 0.5 system, where if after a half second, you're either driving or you're passing or you're shooting, and the ball movement all year long has been so good and so crisp. In fact, that was one of the complaints after last night's game against the Clippers, was kind of the defense that they were running at Booker, how the ball movement wasn't what it normally is, and they should have been able to punish the Clippers a little bit better for how they were defending them last night, and they were kind of off their game a little bit. But you're absolutely right. It doesn't feel slow because the ball moves so crisply around the half-court offense that it feels a lot faster than that. And that's, again, another added benefit. I want to play this for you, too, because, again, this is Bill Simmons. He spent a lot of time talking about the Phoenix Suns today on his podcast, and I thought you would appreciate this, especially given how long you've been following this team, how long I've been following this team. He thinks the Phoenix Suns might have the most what-ifs out of any team in the history of the NBA. I'll let him explain.
What if we didn't get Kareem? What if we won the triple overtime game in Boston, which they easily could have, and then game six was in Phoenix? What if KJ doesn't get hurt in that 1990 game? What if we don't have the cocaine scandal in 1984 where Walter Davis is headed to the Hall of Fame and they get this whole thing and all of a sudden it's complete chaos and they have to rebuild the team and they get lucky with the KJ trade? But that cocaine scandal is a what if. What if KJ shows up in the 93 finals? What if the Mario Elie shot doesn't go in? What if Robert Sarver comes in 2005 and six, if he actually spent money beyond what he did that first year with Steve Nash, Quentin Richardson, they splurged, then all of a sudden they were selling picks, and then they never were able to get over the hump. And there's, they basically gave away Luol Deng. They basically gave away a pick that became Rajon Rondo, et cetera, et cetera. What if the Horry shove never happened? One of the great what-ifs of the last 20 years. What if the Artest rebound on the Kobe airball in game four, 2010? What if they take Luka Doncic? Those are 10 awesome what ifs. Like 10 really, like you fall asleep at night going, wow, what if that didn't happen?
I don't know if I'd use the word awesome, Gambo, but those are a lot of what ifs.
Boy, doesn't that it's so funny that he did this podcast. Yesterday, we and you were talking about the year with Nash and they got Quentin Richardson and Joe Johnson. It's a topic for another day. But, Joe Johnson was in the news last week by saying, if I would have stayed with Phoenix, we would have won a championship.
Right.
It's my fault. We would have won a championship. And then yesterday we were sitting there like, yeah, that year that they didn't sign Joe, I think they had Nash and I think they signed Quentin Richardson. And then here he is today doing a podcast talking about the same thing that we were talking about yesterday.
I know.
But we were off the air. We didn't talk about that on the air. We talked about that off the air. That's so funny.
Yeah, just you and I off the air. We were just kind of kicking that around a little bit.
Yeah, we were kicking it around. Yep.
Yeah. And as a forever Suns fan born and raised here, man, I lead the league in what ifs. I don't know. But there have been more than their fair share of what ifs. There's no doubt about that. Now, starting on Monday, we're giving you the chance every weekday to win $500. What you need to do is text the word bonus to 62620 to register, then listen for your name. 7:35 in the morning with Doug and Wolf, 1:35 with Bickley and Murata, 3:35 with us here on Burns and Gambo for your chance at the Arizona Sports Signing Bonus. Again, text the word bonus to 620620. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, Suns earned some respect with their two-game stretch against the Jazz and the Clippers, but maybe even more vital than the wins and the losses, Phoenix's young core got a taste of playoff-like basketball. We'll tell you about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Gambo, let me start this conversation by asking you this as we welcome you back into the Burns and Gambo Show.
Start it.
If the last two games against high-level playoff competition for the Suns, if that was a test, did they pass?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, flying colors.
Flying colors?
Flying colors.
Like you come out of those two games, even with the loss last night, you come out of those two games saying, if that's what the playoffs are going to look like, if that's what they're going to feel like, then I feel really good about the Suns' chances to be able to compete very well in those playoffs.
Did you think I wouldn't say that?
You know what? I haven't really had a chance to talk to you a lot about last night's loss, so I wasn't sure how you were kind of factoring how they lost and what happened in that game. The Utah game, sure. I mean, obviously, they won in overtime. They played really well. I wasn't sure how you were factoring in a loss into that equation as to whether they passed or not these two tests.
I mean, they gave the Clippers... it wasn't like the Clippers got to rest. The Clippers didn't rest their guys until there was a minute left in the game either, you know.
Right.
Like, they had to run Kawhi and Paul George a lot of minutes. So much to where Kawhi's not playing tonight against Houston. I mean, or is it Paul George?
Paul George isn't playing. Yeah, Paul George.
Those guys had to play until there was a minute left in the game. And that's when they finally said, okay, we'll put in our subs, you put in your subs. Because that was a four-point game in the fourth quarter. I mean, it was a four-point game midway through the fourth. The Clippers didn't have that game in hand until very, very late in the fourth quarter. Very late.
Yeah.
So they had to give it everything they had to win that basketball game. Now, you know, you could say, oh, they're not going to shoot the three like that, but they do. Like, they shoot the three extremely well. I got like six guys that are all having career years shooting the three. So you can't say, oh, that's not going to happen again, because maybe it will, because they're just knocking down the threes. I mean, the Suns gave them everything they could handle, and the Suns were on a back-to-back, and they had to travel. I think that, you know, listen, if the Suns played the Clippers, all things being equal, in a seven-game series, there's no way the Clippers are sweeping the Suns. And I don't even think they're winning it in five. I mean, that's a six- or seven-game series.
Yeah, and
same with the Jazz. I mean, even though the Suns beat the Jazz, that's a six- or seven-game series. I don't know that there is anybody out there that's taking care of the Phoenix Suns in four or five games. Now, in the bubble last year, we would have been happy to get swept in four games.
True.
Happy.
100%.
Thank you. They could have beat them by 30. You were just happy. You would have been happy just to see them in the playoffs.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. No, I was pretty sure that's how you were going to answer that question, because it's hard. We don't like being encouraged by losses. You know, we're kind of taught, you know, moral victories, blah, blah, blah. And I don't think
you said after the two games.
Yeah.
One was
a
win.
I didn't know how you were going to process the loss and all that. The reason why I'm asking the question, our friends over at Bright Side of the Sun, and we frequently use a lot of their content to kind of kickstart conversations here on Burns and Gambo. And they wrote a doozy today. It was a really good one about what the Jazz and the Clippers game tell us about the Suns and their playoff challenges and their playoff chances. And they write, there are two reasons that some people don't think the Suns will get very far. Number two is Chris Paul's playoff ceiling. We'll get to that in a minute. Number one is the lack of playoff experience. And I liked what they did here. They looked at the Suns' young basketball players. They didn't look at Jay Crowder. They didn't count him. They didn't look at Torrey Craig. Obviously, he's played in plenty of playoff games, and he's got experience. They looked at Mikal Bridges. They looked at Devin Booker. They looked at DeAndre Ayton. And they looked at Cameron Johnson, four guys who have never played anywhere near NBA playoff basketball in their entire careers. How did they do over these last two games? And it was interesting to see the reviews. Mikal Bridges, up and down. Cam Johnson, up and down. Devin Booker, they write, very good. DeAndre Ayton, all caps, big time. And he was the one who got the biggest praise for how he played in these two games. They gave Booker good marks. They kind of said rough first quarter against Utah, but he kind of settled down after that. And then against the Clippers last night, but they had a hard time stopping him. He just didn't get off a lot of shots because they defended him so hard. But DeAndre Ayton was the one guy who came out with the rave reviews in the last 2 days, and I knew you would like that. I knew you would.
Well, because I'm a fan, you know, of his. I mean, I really, you know, I felt at times like I've had to defend him, and I really didn't like that I had to, because I just wish that, you know, other people, and I think a lot of people do, but there's a lot of people that don't. There are a lot of people that didn't like something about his game, and there were a lot of people that were impatient and didn't want to give a big like him time to develop. And then there were other people that just wanted to compare him to Luka. He'll never live up to, you know, DeAndre Ayton. I mean, he is a really good player right now. Really good. And, you know, you would rue the day if they traded him. And then the things that, you know, I mean, you know me, I would get so frustrated by the, oh, trade him for Karl-Anthony Towns. really, that guy, oh, my God, like, he can't play any defense. Like, he can't play any, and he needs the ball in his hands all the time. It doesn't fit. It's been a square peg into a round. It doesn't fit.
Yeah.
So, you know me really well. It's just my frustration level with what people wanted and expected out of him. Sometimes I would boil over. I almost couldn't believe it. Look, he's going to be better next year, and then he'll be better the year. And when he's 26 years old, he's going to be an unstoppable force in this league. He's 22 now. I'm projecting 4 years ahead. But, you know, that at 26 years old, he's still a super, super young guy in this league.
Yeah. Monty Williams, and just for the record, I know you know this, but I'm just saying this for anybody listening. I never advocated trading him for Carl Anthony Towns. What I advocated for was a more consistent level of effort from DeAndre Ayton. That is something, and the effort he has shown these last two nights, I do believe the Suns will go very, very far in these playoffs if he plays at that consistent level of effort every single night or most every single night in the playoffs. I think they can go very far with that. But Monty was asked last night if this game was a roadmap to kind of the next step for Book and Ayton.
It's not the first time those guys have seen this. People have been blitzing Book since I've been here before I came to Phoenix. So that's nothing new. Maybe, you know, DA's seeing more of a crowd around the basket because he's been good. And he's a willing passer. So that's not something I'm worried about at all. Those guys, DA will learn how to play in that environment, but it's something that Book has done pretty well.
And Chris Paul was asked what he felt about how the young guys responded during the stretch of these last two games.
It's fun. You know, this is why you play, you know, for the energy for these games. There's nothing like it. And we got to expect that, you know, for the rest of the season, this is what we're going to get from teams. You know, we still haven't proven anything to anybody yet. And I think we got a team where we try to prove things ourselves. We expect a lot from ourselves, and it's a great team to be on and a great group of guys to be around.
He seemed very pleased with how they played, even with the loss last night. I think he was pleased with how the young guys responded.
Well, and that's Chris Paul has to be like that, right? He can't always be upset after a loss or picking on, you know. Look, they played hard. I mean, they played hard. I mean, Chris had 3 assists last night, okay? So he didn't contribute, you know, in that game. And they tried, and there was that one stretch where they gave him a lot of time off. You remember that?
I do.
Like, they were giving him a lot of rest, just sure, trying to see if they could hang around. And because you also don't want to, you know, wear him out. There's only so many miles on the tires. He's doing a great job, right? You're going to, you know, Chris Paul is that tire you get, and they say, yeah, you should get 50,000 miles out of it. And he's on 60,000 right now. And you're like, you know what? The tread's still good on this car.
Yeah, that's it.
No, that's him. He's a tire that is supposed to get 50,000 miles, and it's at 60. And you're like, I don't think I need to change these tires. I mean, the tread is still good.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, we'll stay on the Suns game and their loss last night to the LA Clippers. Was it the Clippers? Or was it the schedule that was the most responsible for that loss last night? We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.